Call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 3, roll call.
John Steinbrink.
Here.
Monica Juhas.
Here.
Steve Komorkowicz is excused. Clyde Allen.
Here.
Mike Serpy.
Quorum being present. Item 4, minutes of the meeting. This is for December 17, 2012. Presented to board members in written form.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Item 5 are public hearings. First one being item A of the proposed 2013 sewer utility and water utility budgets.
Would you go ahead and start, Kathy?
Mr. President and the Village Board, I'm here to present, with the help of John Steinbrink, Jr., the sewer and water budget that we proposed for the 2013 budget year. This slide shows a summary of the budget and compares it to the 2012 budget. The revenue here is looking at going for the sewer utility is going down about $157,000. And the main reason for that reduction is due to a large industrial customer being charged for sewer in the when it only had a water-only meter on that location at their facility. And that was reflected in the 2012 budget. Therefore, we are reducing from the 2012 down to 2013. Otherwise, most of the other revenues are staying stable for the sewer utility, and there's no rate increase budgeted. Operating expenses are up $138,000, mainly depreciation of $99,000, which is a non-cash item. And the new programs, which will be discussed a little bit later, of around almost $40,000, offset by anticipated reduction in treatment expense of almost $50,000. Non-operating is interest expense on debt netted against interest income on investments. Majority of the decrease is attributed to the interest expense going down in the sewer utility. Cash is estimated at year-end to be up $172,000. Compared to what we're going to be looking at ending 2012 with. This is a pie chart of our sewer operating revenue, and you can see the biggest chunk of it is residential, which accounts for about $2.6 million of revenue, or 57%. The next biggest category is industrial, accounting for 24%, or a little over $1.1 million. This includes our industrial surcharging of industrial customers. And then our third largest component is commercial, which is 18% or about 0.8 million of revenue. And the smallest category is public authority at less than 1%. As for operating expense, our biggest operating expense is treatment, accounting for 40% of our revenue or our expenses. It's for this year we're looking at budgeting $1.8 million or 40% of the expenses. This is Kenosha Water Utilities charged to the village for sewer treatment. All of our sewage goes to the city of Kenosha Water Utility for treatment. Depreciation is our next biggest component, which is $1.4 million or 31% of our expenditures. This is recognizing the cost of the infrastructure over its useful life. It's a non-cash expense. When recognized, infrastructures are either donated by developers or installed and paid by special assessments. Personnel is our third biggest expense at $0.7 million or 15%. This includes both operational labor, clerical, and administrative labor. Other is 10% or a little less than $500,000. It includes electric for $74,000 and also contractual services, supplies, phone, etc. And the last charge, which is coming only for 4%, or $163,000, is the use of the vehicles and equipment operating and maintained by our Fleet Internal Service Fund being used by the sewer utility. This is a listing of the new programs in this budget. There's three new programs that were requested, and they were all being recommended to this evening. The first one is development of a lateral insurance program. This is hiring a consultant to actually recommend how the program should run. It's actually charging residents a monthly fee to purchase an insurance so that if their lateral fails, they can get that replaced.
Through private lateral.
Private lateral replaced. So this is all stuff to do with what's on their property, the private lateral, not anything to do with us. So this year we're looking at hiring a consultant to review this and figure out how it should run to best benefit the residents as well as the village in general. And then utility analyst training for $2,500, which is split between sewer and water. It's additional training for a position within the utilities. And then the finance, HR, payroll software conversion training. This is their allocation. And all of our enterprise funds got allocated a portion of the operating expense of purchasing the software, which is conversion and training, and also the cost of the actual software, which you'll see in the capital section next. So this totals almost $40,000. The next section is capital, and I'll have John explain the request for capital. All capital requests that were submitted is being recommended for approval.
Mr. President and members of the board, there's eight projects that were under consideration for the sewer budget this year. The first one is a continuation of our Cooper Road rehab to reduce INI. It's a lining of the sanitary sewer. Crews are actually doing it this week, and then we plan on bidding it out and doing it again later on this spring. They're doing around 1,900 feet of sanitary sewer rehab instead of having to go through and excavate the road and the sanitary sewer and dig up the excavation and all the costs with restoration. They can actually go into the existing sewer and reline it. So actually it makes a new lining, it eliminates infiltration, and it gives it a little bit of structural integrity. So we're looking to continue that again at $100,000 this year. So the $85,000 is just a continuation of it from last year, and then the $100,000 completing the program for this year. And then we plan on doing $100,000 every year until the project is complete. Second one is the Des Plaines River Corridor Trail. $100,000 should get us a continuation of completing that trail across the path. And so we have access for our sewer crews to maintain a interceptor sewer line. Rebuilding a lift stations is our lift station in Carroll Beach. Our crews in-house will be going through and doing the work of the rebuilding, updating pumps, motors, controls. We do it in-house so we can save some money. Heritage Valley lift station abandonment, the $50,000 is for an easement acquisition and planning and design. And then we plan on actually going through next year in 2014 and doing the actual construction. Once we built the interceptor line from Sewer D out to the south, it now gave us a conduit to eliminate a lift station. And so we'll save all of the maintenance charges. It would probably cost us about $100,000 to rehab that lift station. It's been there about 18 years now. So we would eliminate that lift station altogether and many maintenance costs that would come along with that. A generator or lift station, we're looking at putting a lift station at Carroll Beach Unit A, having a generator out there. We're proposing to do one every year to provide better service to our residents, repave sewer sites. We have some sewer sites that are pretty beat up, and we're looking at just paving one site per year. And then the second one is the finance, payroll, and HR software allocation to the sewer utility. Yes, Mike.
What is this, the one? The lift station, is that $30,000 for one generator or more?
Yes, it is. It's $30,000 for one generator. The lift station itself, or the generator itself, is around $20,000. Then by the time we run the new conduits, control panels, our in-house electrician's time to wire it all up, we're planning around like $28,000, $29,000, but we build a little bit extra in just to make sure we're under budget.
How many more lift stations are going to be in need of generators?
I believe we have three more left.
Good.
So this is a listing of our capital totaling about $459,000. Next, a look at the water utility in summary. This is a summary compared to the 2012 budget to 2013 proposed and the dollar change. Operating revenue is looking at going up slightly by a little less than $15,000. Operating expenses, we're looking at an increase of $269,000. The majority of that is, again, depreciation, which is a non-cash item at $151,000, and new programs at $28,261, which we explained a little bit later. Net non-operating expenses is interest income or interest expense on debt offset by interest income. The increase is due to interest income. The interest expense is going down more than the interest income is going. So it's giving us a net increase of $25,000 because of the decrease in interest expense. Transfers is increasing $70,000, and this is all because of an increase in the amount of the tax equivalent being paid by the water utility to the Village of Pleasant Prairie General Government. This is a formula set by the Public Service Commission. It takes the value of the assets of the water utility times the mill rate that we calculate for our property tax real estate taxpayers. And the value in the water utility did not go down like it did in the village in terms of other assessed value. Therefore, with the rate going up, the tax equivalent goes up. Cash balance, we're projecting an increase of $172,000 based on this budget up to $992,000. This is a breakout of revenue by categories or by classes of customers. The biggest class of customers is our residential, similar or the same as sewer, being our largest customer category. It accounts for 37% of our revenue, and it's dollar-wise $1.4 million. Industrial is the next biggest category at 28%, or $1.1 million. And some of our biggest customers is Wisconsin Energy, Power Plant, Fair Oaks Farms, and Olds Products, accounting for over half of that revenue. Fire protection is our next biggest category at 22%. It includes both our private fire protection and our public fire protection for a total of a little less than $1 million of revenue. Commercial is our fourth category at 0.4 million or 11%. Top customers, St. Catherine's Hospital, Wisconsin Energy, Westwood, Timber Ridge. Public authority is our smallest customer base at only 2% or $70,000. $20,013 water operating expenses. Similar to the sewer utility, with sewer treatment being our largest expense, on our water side, purchased water is our largest expense, accounting for 42% of our expenses, or our $1.5 million. And we purchase our water from the Kenosha Water Utility. Depreciation, just like in sewer, is our second largest expense at 29%, or $1 million. Again, this is recognizing the cost of the infrastructure over its useful life, and this is a non-cash expense. Personnel is 16%, or $0.6 million, including operating personnel, administrative, and clerical. Next category is 11% is other, accounting for $375,000, which includes electric. That accounts for one-fourth at $95,000, plus contractual services, minor equipment, office supplies, and phone. And the smallest category, just like in sewer, is the Fleet Internal Service Fund, allocation of 2% or $75,000. This is charging the water utility for the use of the equipment and vehicles which are owned by the Fleet Internal Service Fund. This is our request for new programs. On the top section has three new programs that are being recommended, whereas down in the bottom is a new program request that is not being recommended. On the top, there's a utility analyst training, which is the same as it was on the sewer side, 2,500 split. Washing the water tower's exterior, and this is $10,000. This is washing one water tower. John can probably explain which water tower it is this year, but it goes, and then we're looking at another 3-4 years of similar amounts to wash the towers around the village. And then, again, you see the allocation of the finance, HR software, conversion, and training for a little less than $10,000. Not approved is the hosting fee for remote water meter reads of $6,000. We removed that from the budget. There was a capital project to install a tower to be able to remote read from a central location, but currently there's only 20% of our water meters that are on remote water read meters. So we were going to push that project off for 2 years until we get close to 50% of our meters on remote read so that we can capture more of the readings that way before we start spending the expense on hosting fees, which is $6,000 actually accounted for only half a year of hosting fees. It we're estimating about $12,000 a year to host so that we can pull our meters at any moment, know what all the readings are throughout the village with all the remote readers. And this is the listing of our water utility budget approved capital. The only one that's not on this list, as I said, was the actual tower to read the remote readers. Other than that, we are recommending all of the projects listed, and John can explain the towers or the projects that are listed here.
Mr. President, members of the board, first project that we have is painting a water tower. We are proposing to paint the 165 water tower, which is on the around the 5700 block of 165. It's due to be painted. It doesn't need a total blast off of paint, just a scuffing up, and then some minor repairs on the inside and painting the interior dry and the wet of the water tower. The second one is upgrading the MXU readers. That's the remote reader that Kathy was talking about. We're looking to put in around 400 more of them this coming up year. We have around 800 in our system so far with around 4,000 meters total. One of the advantages that we have, and this will be really nice for some of our industrial users, is that we'll get to track an hour-by-hour read how much water that they're using, and so we can better supply our demand to our customers. The second one, the third one that we have is replacing booster pump control at Sheridan Lift Station. We have a 200-horsepower, it's called a soft start, and you really can't do much control of it. It's either 100% on or 100% off, and so we're proposing to change that with a variable speed drive on that, and that's going to better help us maintain our pressure within our water system and hopefully save some energy also. Fourth one that we have is our water meter upgrade program to some Omni meters. The meters that we have right now are made out of brass, and they have a higher lead content. PSC passed a new law beginning in 2014 that there's a very small amount of lead that's allowed within any piece of the water utility system. And with the meters being brass, that's something that's very important. We have to change the meters out on a four-year rotation, and so we're changing them out probably about half a dozen of them per year until we have them all done, which we got to have done by 2018. So we're kind of chipping away at that year by year versus doing it all at one time. Paving a water site, the same as we have our sewer sites. A lot of the asphalt in some of our sites is broken up and just needs to be replaced and maintained. So we're going to do one of these every other year. Installing a pressure-reducing valve on Sheridan Road. We're looking at doing just that, putting in a pressure-reducing valve just to the south of our booster station on Sheridan Road that's going to better regulate the pressure that we have to our Carroll Beach area. When the 400-horsepower pumps turn on at that Sheridan Road lift station, it gives a large pressure increase, especially at that Carroll Beach area. And so we're looking at reducing that pressure to a manageable size. And so we'll still provide a good service to our customers with a lack of having anything being damaged within their home or in the main itself. Now, the next one is the Traverse City hydrant replacement. We have some older hydrants that we're just replacing as they fail. So we're hoping to replace 3 or 4 of them next year as they fail, as the bolts go bad. And that gives us better fire protection. And the final one is the water allocation for our finance and HR and payroll software.
So that's a summary of all of the water capital projects that we're looking at or recommending. The next slides are summaries of some different statistics across all of our enterprise funds. The first one I'd like to share with you is the 2013 principal outstanding. This would be at the end of 2013. How much debt will be in each of our utilities. Our sewer utility will have the largest amount of debt remaining at a little over $7 million. And the water utility will have $370,000 and actually be debt-free in 2015. And the sanitary sewer sanitation will be has $170,000 and will be debt-free by 2014. The clean water utility and the fleet internal service fund has zero debt at this point and no plans to borrow. These are our capital assets that we maintain in these utilities, and this is the estimate that we're looking at for ending this year, 2012. You can see the sewer utility has the most assets at a little over $52 million, and then the water utility a little less than $43 million. Sanitation doesn't have many assets. It's basically their storage garage and some recycling and garbage bins. For a little less than $600,000. And then our clean water utility has a little over $23 million of assets. And our fleet internal service fund, which has all of our vehicles for utilities and public works, currently has a little over $3 million. Currently, with all these utilities, we are valued at $122 million, down slightly from last year due to limited additions to any of these assets and to depreciation. Reducing the value. We're always concerned about how much cash each of these utilities have so we can continue cash operations and be able to pay our debt and our bills. This is a cash summary of our five enterprise funds and their 2013 estimated ending cash balance. The sewer utility, we're required to have a separate fund for sewer replacement. And currently that fund needs to be valued at a little over $1.1 million. And then our sewer utility, the rest of the cash, we're estimating at $1.7, almost $1.8 million in the sewer utility. In the water utility, we're looking at a little less than $1 million. And the clean water has nicely accumulated some funds for future replacement of infrastructure at $2.4 million. Sanitary has cash of a little over $200,000. And then our fleet internal service fund has a little over $1 million to help replace vehicles in the future for both the public works and the utilities. But then we also, during the general government budgeting process, we added some of the other departments that had vehicles like IT, engineering, inspection, and then also RecPlex to that. So this fund of a little over $1 million is for future replacement of all vehicles in the village and equipment except for fire and rescue and for police vehicles. So overall, in these five enterprise funds, we have a total cash unreserved of $6.4 million and $1.1 million reserved, and we're up about a little over $1 million from what we estimated ending last year at, or this, 2012 at. What's important is this cash is used to help us run our daily business for operating purposes to pay our bills, pay our employees. But another important reason to have a cash reserve is to replace future infrastructure and not have to borrow for that replacement in the future. And this kind of gives you the picture of where we are in terms of cash versus our capital assets. What percentage do we have set aside to help us replace these assets in the future? You can see over to the right-hand side that the sanitation and fleet internal service are the best funded in terms of cash reserves to help us replace future infrastructure, whereas our other three utilities are pretty low in terms of their percentage to capital assets, with water being the lowest at 2%, and then we have 6% for sewer and 10% for clean water. Our goal is to, for those three utilities, is to eventually try to get those up to the 35% that the other two utilities are at to be able to replace future infrastructure without borrowing. But currently we don't want to raise rates to be able to do that. So this is where we stand right now. As for sewer and water, we are not recommending any rate increases, but we're currently intervening in the Kenosha Water case, which they're asking for a rate increase. We don't know what percentage they're asking for, but we know if we wait till the end of the process that we would not be able to make many changes. But if we intervene during the beginning, mid to beginning of the process, we might be able to make an impact for our customers to be able to either hopefully maintain our rates or have a very slight increase, but maybe even hopefully reduce our rates. But It's all depends on the Public Service Commission, and we have hired a consultant from Baker Tilly to help us with this, and also a legal counsel to help us through this process. We thought that was good money spent at this time to help us do what we can for our customers and any future customers. We've lost customers because of our water rates being the highest and our sewer rates being one of the highest in the state of Wisconsin, whereas Kenosha Braggs at their water rates and their sewer rates are among the lowest in the state of Wisconsin. So we don't get any special treatment for being their largest customer. We actually pay more than some of their bigger commercial customers. So that's in the process right now, and we'll keep you updated on that. So that's my presentation of the sewer and water budgets and what's being recommended by myself and the village administrator.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, John. Do you want to open it up now to citizens' comments then, or?
There were no sign-ups tonight.
Okay. I'm going to open it up to citizens' comments. Anybody wishing to speak on the sewer and utility and water utility budgets? Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? Hearing none, I'm going to close the budget hearing and open up to the Board of Trustees. Mike?
Kathy, good presentation. I think out of this presentation, I like the statement that Kathy made about the intervention by the village with the city's proposed water rate increase. I've said it in the past, and I'll say it again. They're using us as a cash cow, and I think it's been going on for a little bit too long. They had the opportunity years ago to create a regional water utility and elected to go to the wholesale route, of which the residents of Pleasant Prairie are paying dearly. I hope that the intervention goes well, at least in the favor of the residents of Pleasant Prairie and the village. So good job, Kathy, and good luck in the future.
Clyde.
Thank you, Mr. President. Again, thank you, Kathy and John. I got a couple questions, and I don't know who can answer them or if even Mike's the appropriate person to answer them, but our debt in sewer is $7 million. When will the bulk of that come down? And if you don't have an answer right away, that's okay at a later date. I guess the questions I'm going to raise are, we'll be okay to get an answer later. I'm just have little concerns because our assets being $52 million, $7 seems to be a little high. When do we anticipate getting that down? Obviously, the goal in the future is to create our cash flow to be able to maintain all the sewers at no tax increase.
So I believe the debt schedule goes through like 2020, but it has like some couple blue in payments in this next 7 years. So we're going to have to refinance out those blue in payments to keep our debt at that around $1 million, I believe, that we were running. So we're probably looking at more like 2025.
Sewer is just by its nature, the improvements that are. Just by its nature, the improvements that are required for sanitary sewer are far more expensive than water. I mean, it just from the distribution or the collection infrastructure to the major collector lines that go to the city, it requires a lot more maintenance. It's just more intensive, and a lot of that work comes back. You know, it's in the scheme of things, it's, you know, some of it's 20 years old. And maybe a little bit less, but the life of that of the collection lines is relatively long. You know, John has been doing a good job of getting, you know, the numerous lift stations we have, you know, back up to speed, get them working right. But we have the same ongoing issue with the Kenosha Water Utility on the basis of how we're built. And although they're not, you know, proposing a rate increase at this time that we would, you know, we would probably take some action with, but what happens with the Kenosha Water Utility for sanitary sewer is we're billed for the flow that goes through the meter at 7th Avenue, by and large, and some other places where we're metered as well. And at that point, we're also metered for the strength of the sewage. If you're a customer of the city of Kenosha, the strength of the sewage is average across the entire, you know, city Kenosha utility. So any, and the same thing with the inflow and infiltration that the city has, because every sewer main in the world, I mean, it's a matter of degree, but every sewer main is going to have inflow and infiltration. In Pleasant Prairie, we pay for every drop of infiltration that occurs in our system and goes through the meter. Again, in the city, that cost is averaged out. So when you look at how the sewer system was constructed, it was constructed in accordance with the master plan that was prepared by Sewer PAC that showed how everything was going to be, you know, going to the lakefront as part of our regional utility. And had that plan not been in place, had we you know, stayed with our treatment plants and did something else, you know, the sewer utility would have looked a lot different, because we grew the main infrastructure, the 30-inch main that comes out of 7th Avenue, the 30-inch main that goes down 165, and then we grew from that. So we, all the big pipe is in place, and that's the earliest pipe we have in place. So we have, it's going to be a while before we have enough customers to retire the impact of that. Every time somebody hooks up to the system, they pay the $1,600. And as there was growth in the village, that helped, because there was more and more connection fees that were going to help retire some of that debt. So that's why that debt is higher, the amount of, oversizing that we're going to be paying off for probably the next 10 to 15 years, as well as we're probably, we could be paying, more than 50% more than what a typical sewer user would have been paying had it been a regional utility. And, as with the water utility, we're going to wait for the next rate increase, and then we're going to, that's a little bit different action that we'd filed, but we'd still file it with the Public Service Commission. But, as Kenosha Utility's largest customer, larger than any other customer they have, we pay the highest rate. So it's an inverted scale for the village, and it's a profit center for the water utility. So I hate to say that we're going to have to work on that, but I mean, that isn't the whole thing. I mean, even if we were to achieve a good scale rate with the Kenosha Water Utility, we're 5,000 customers paying for a sanitary sewer system that could collect 20 million gallons a day, and we're probably pushing 3 to 4 million gallons a day. So there's a lot of excess capacity that we're paying for, and that's just, as we grew that out, that's the way it is. So.
Okay. Thank you. That's the exact answer I was looking for. Thank you very much. And it's not all negatives. I'm happy. The water, obviously, has done very well with the debt retiring in 2014. That's good to see. My only other concern was, is there a plan to get enough in reserve to start on the sewer replacement and things like that? And obviously, you've answered that very well, so thank you.
Other board comments?
John, I just have two questions for you. Regarding the washing of the tower, which tower is that going to be this year?
We're looking at doing the Big Oaks Water Tower.
Big Oaks. And then how many years is there in between a washing?
We're looking at doing a wash about, I believe, every 4 years. And so we're going to be alternating every year that we're not painting a tower. We're going to be washing a tower. And so we'll be washing one about one every other year.
Okay. And then my other question is with the Travis City hydrant replacements, how many did you say that was? Three or two?
Yeah, we're looking at three, hopefully three. We really don't replace them unless they fail. Mm-hmm. For some reason, historically, they've been failing on the amount of two or three per year. And so when we do our exercise program, if the bolts start leaking, if they won't shut off, they won't seep, they won't drain, instead of going through and doing a repair on an old hydrant, we just do the excavation and then replace it with a new Mueller hydrant.
All right. And are all the hydrants the same make and brand throughout the village?
They're not yet. That's our intention, is to have them all be Muellers at the end of the day. And so we're just slowly replacing the ones that are an older model, an older style, the ones that aren't doing good with the hot soils that we have. And so hopefully, within 10, 15 years, all of those will be gone, and we'll just have the newer style hydrants.
Thank you. Wonderful presentation, Kathy. John.
Thank you.
Good budget.
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 13-1, the 2013 Sewer Utility Budget.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Mike. Any further discussion on that item? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries.
Move approval of 1302 related to the water utility.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica. Any discussion on 1302? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. That concludes our public hearings for this evening. We'll move on to item six, citizens' comments.
First speaker, Brenda Dahl.
And Brenda, we ask you to give us your name and address for the record.
Good evening. My name is Brenda Dahl. My address is 4273 113th Street in the village of Pleasant Prairie. And I'm here tonight to introduce myself. I think many of you may be aware that I announced my candidacy for Pleasant Prairie Municipal Court Judge. And I wanted to start out by thanking Judge George Easton for his many years of faithful service to the village. But a bit about me, I currently have my own law practice. I've practiced for over 11 years, with the last 7 of those years practicing in Kenosha County. In addition to my private practice, I'm appointed as a guardian ad litem by the Kenosha County Circuit Court judges. And in that position, I represent children and the elderly and the disabled. So between my private practice and my guardian ad litem position, I'm essentially in the courtroom almost every day of the week. Prior to practicing in Kenosha, I worked for a large law firm in Milwaukee, where I specialized in real estate law, and I was involved in municipal law, which included drafting and researching ordinances and zoning laws. I'm also on the faculty as an adjunct professor at Concordia University. I teach law classes there. But I grew up in Kenosha. I graduated from Tremper High School, and I earned my law degree from Marquette University. I graduated there with a law degree magna cum laude. And my undergraduate degree is in business administration. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison with honors, and I had a double major in marketing and risk management there. But I live in the village with my husband, Steve Dahl. We have 3 children together. We live in Mission Hills. My husband actually was a paid-on-call firefighter for the village before he was hired as a City of Kenosha fireman. We have 3 children. All 3 of our children attend Prairie Lane Elementary. I have Tyler, who's in 4th grade, and then I have twin girls, Allison and Caitlin, who are in kindergarten at Prairie Lane. Some of you might also know my dad, Arlen Baumgarten. He's been involved in the village with the Prairie Riders Snowmobile Club as the trail master for the village, so he knows a lot of the landowners here. So in closing, I just wanted to again thank Judge George Easton. I think that he's done a really great job of running his courtroom efficiently and effectively, and if I'm elected, I would plan to continue in his footsteps and run the courtroom in a similar fashion. I would use a common sense approach on the bench, also paying special attention to minimizing costs for our taxpayers wherever possible. So I would love your support in the upcoming election, and I would love your vote. If there's anything else that you would like to discuss with me further, I would be glad to answer any questions that you have, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brenda.
No additional sign-ups tonight, Mr. President.
Anyone else wishing to speak under citizens' comments? Hearing none, I'll close citizens' comments. We'll move on to item 7, administrator's report.
Happy New Year.
Moving on to item 8, new business. First item being item A, consider ordinance 13-01 to amend chapter 370 of the municipal code relating to building permit fees.
Mr. President, members of the board,
We did a review during the budgeting process of some of our fees, and we looked at our fees, and we try to keep the fees, if possible, consistent with generally the area and also the city of Kenosha. And so the fees that we have here will help to bring in some additional revenue. And this is particularly important in the fact that we did lose revenue because the state passed a law. We can no longer charge an electrical licensing fee, so that was a source of revenue for us. So the changes in the fees that I'm recommending should offset the hopefully increase the revenue that we would have lost from those licensing fees. Specifically, we are looking at raising the single-family residential fees for new electrical service from $150 to $180. Electrical wiring extension or rewiring, increasing that to $60, or increasing the minimum, or increasing it from $50 to $60 minimum. For two-family residential, we're looking at increasing the new electric fee from $300 to $360. Other fees, the minimum permit fee for commercial, increase that from $75 to $100. And I'm going to go to the next one. That's it? Okay. So those are the increases that I'm recommending. And, again, these are in line with fees that are charged with the city of Kenosha, so we're not, you know, charging more than our neighbor to the north. So I recommend that these fees, the ordinance be changed to include these fee increases. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions?
How did it come about that we don't? That we're not allowed to charge for electrical permit. Is that a lobby effort?
Yeah.
You know, whenever that happens, that enrages the hell out of me. Whenever that happens, I think we should be allowed to violate that law and then let them take us to court. And let's, you know, that just bothers me. That just bothers me that a lobbyist would go to Madison, give them all kinds of money, and then we have to suffer the consequences.
You mentioned going to court. Now the attorneys are all smiling.
They're all here. They represent me. I may need help. John, you're better off where you're at.
Any other comments or questions?
Motion to approve ordinance 13-01.
Second. Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item B, consider weights and measures annual assessments. July 1st, 2011 through June 30th, 2012.
Mr. President, members of the board, on an annual basis, the state goes through a number of the businesses in the village and verifies their measurement and their scales and their scanners to see that they're reading properly. So they charge us. Can you go to the next slide? I guess there isn't any. The state charges us $4,800 to do this testing every year. This year they tested 1,097 different samples throughout a number of the businesses in the village. And basically what we do is we take the total cost that we have to pay the state by the number of tests, and then we charge back to the business that cost. In addition to that, we also charge a license fee for the businesses in the village and also an administrative fee. So this then recovers the cost that we pay to the state as well as our operating costs. So I'm recommending approval of the schedule, and then if that schedule is approved, then the bills will be sent out to the various businesses. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Mike, there's quite a time lag in there. Mm-hmm. Is that what we use as...
Yeah, we what happens is we don't get the bill from the state until I think we get it in like October or whatever, and then it's just a question of getting it through. This year I was a little bit later. I didn't realize that I forgot that we had to come before the board. Normally it's at the end of the year, so.
We'll see if we get a lobby effort to eliminate that. Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item C, consider the request of Daniel Rebecca, Ruth and Jeffrey and Elizabeth Crabtree to release an ingress and egress easement on a portion of Lot 2 of the Certified Suburban Map 2503, and this is to service Lot 3 of said CSM that is no longer needed since each lot has its own access to 47th Avenue.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is a request for release of an access easement, basically on a portion of Lot 2 of CSM 2503. Daniel and Rebecca Ruth own the property located at 11315 47th Avenue, Lot 2 of the CSM. And Jeffrey and Elizabeth Crabtree are constructing a new home just to the south of them on Lot 3 of CSM 2503. The property owners are requesting to release the ingress access easement, basically crossing from one property to the other, because the Crabtrees were able to obtain a fill permit from the Wisconsin DNR and obtain their own access directly to 47th Avenue for the new home that they are on the process of building right now. And since this easement is no longer needed because they have separate access points to 47th Avenue, they are requesting that this easement be released from the certified survey map when it was originally approved, from when it was originally approved. The staff and the Plan Commission recommend approval of this release of this easement, subject to recording this easement document, this release of this document at the Register of Deeds office.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Monica, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item D, consider adoption of a post-issuance tax compliance policy for tax-exempt tax advantage obligations.
Mr. President and the Village Board, attached in your packet is a policy for post-issuance compliance policy. This policy sets forth specific policies for the village to follow to comply with post-issuance debt requirements. So when we issue tax-exempt debt, there's certain procedures that must happen before the debt's issued, as well as after until the debt's actually retired. So this policy is recommended to be adopted so that it's an advantage with the IRS, that if we have a policy on file, if we do get audited, they will treat us more favorably if we have a policy in place. So this policy outlines the different areas that we need to comply with. Some of the areas are the actual issuance of the obligation and the documents that must be kept on file from the actual issuance. There's a section on arbitrage, which means that we as a village cannot make more on interest income on the money that we borrow, then we're paying out an interest expense. And if we do, we need to refund that difference to the IRS. So we need to keep track to make sure that we do not earn more interest than we're paying out, which is really not a problem in the last couple of years based on the low interest rates. Also, it outlines private activity concerns and the policies we must follow to monitor and track if we do use the bond proceeds for private use or make payments out of that for any facilities. And then another section in here is qualified tax-exempt obligations each year to be qualified. Tax-exempt obligations, you must not issue more than $10 million. Otherwise, it gets you a different interest rate. So we have to monitor, make sure that when we issue debt that we know what we're going to issue in the future so we know how to actually sell the debt up front when we first do our first issue. Federal subsidy payments, on a semi-annual basis, we have two debts that actually have these payments from the federal government, so twice a year I have to file a report with the IRS to get our money back from them because the bonds are actually paying out at a higher interest rate the federal government gives us money back to make them lower them to an actual tax-exempt rate. So currently we have two debt issues that are like that, and I have to file a semi-annually, and our payment back is about $71,000 each semi-annually, so $140,000 a year. So if I forget to – that's a big deal if I forget to file those. And also record retention, we must retain the records for as long as the debt is outstanding plus another 7 years. And then there's also continuous disclosure requirements that by the September 30th annually – and when there's material events, I must file with a central database, letting them know with our financial statement as well as any material events that have happened. So this policy, I would like to recommend adoption. We're actually going out for a bond issue to refinance Recplex, I believe, debt issue next meeting. So I'd like to get this in place so that when we get the questionnaire for this upcoming bond offering, I can check off that we do have a policy so that they will look more favorably on us if we do have an audit.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Clyde, second by Monica. Any further discussion?
Kathy, you mean to say we're not making big bucks off our borrowings?
No, we're not.
No further. We'll those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item E, Ordinance 13-02, Ordinance to create Chapter 170 of the Municipal Code pertaining to escorts and escort services.
Mr. President, we have a Kevin Long from Quarles & Brady and Chief Mogensen to talk about this ordinance. If you think back, last fall we went through a work session, Attorney Long and Dave, to address the problem that's been growing and ways we can take care of it. And this, this ordinance that we have tonight is virtually the same with just a few tweaks that we talked about the other night. So I don't know if you guys have anything to add or talk about it? I mean, have you any questions on it since we've met last? But it's an ordinance where I think it's, we probably should have got it out a little bit sooner, but I think this is a good time to get it going.
Mike, I think the chief has a few remarks with respect to the policies behind the ordinance.
Okay.
Mr. President, members of the board, the biggest reason for creating this ordinance is to not only control and the business itself, but it's also to make sure that people working for these businesses meet requirements, that they have clear background checks, that there's no criminal violations related to these, the type of business that they're performing. The reason for that is in escort services in general, there are a number of secondary problems associated with it. Other crimes such as prostitution, pornography, even more serious crimes of robbery, assault, theft, you name it, there's usually some other element that's involved with this type of service. Just the nature of the business, I suppose. What is happening is because of the internet, we're getting a lot of people posting their own personal advertising to provide these services, and it's not regulated. There's no way to keep track of or monitor what is occurring, and as a result, you end up with some of the illegal activity that's taking place. And so, the way the ordinance is structured, it has very severe penalties, and because we want to do whatever we can to make sure that the people in the village are safe and that any legitimate business is protected and is performing a legal service, and that the residents and the people involved with the service do not face any illegal activity or are not subject to it or at risk of it.
Mr. President and trustees, the only other point that I would make, and then we can take any questions. We do have a PowerPoint, which is essentially the same as the PowerPoint that we went through in the working session, but it's important to recognize the purpose of the statute and its, of the ordinance, and it's in the ordinance itself, which is the purpose and intent of the village that the licensing of escorts and escort services be regulated so as to further protect the public interest, safety, and welfare by providing minimum qualifications and to regulate, prevent, and combat, control, and mitigate the harmful secondary effects of escorts and escort services operated within the village in a manner that is fully consistent with the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. And this ordinance, consistent with the directives that came out of our working meeting, is to balance those two, balance the constitutional rights of all citizens as well as the rights of all Pleasant Prairie citizens with respect to mitigating those harmful effects. The secondary effects are very similar to the secondary effects that we discussed when the adult use ordinance was enacted by the village several years ago. And those secondary effects and those findings and those secondary effects are essentially incorporated into the testimony of the chief today.
Is there a PowerPoint we're going to see, or we've already seen pretty much?
It's one we went over in the working session. But.
Okay.
When this came up, I did go online, Dave, and it's big. I was surprised how big it is and how open. So I agree. Now, this, what are the penalties? What did we come up with the penalties on this, Kevin? What did we decide on?
The first violation would be a $2,000 fine plus costs.
And that's coming to Pleasant Prairie's court?
Pleasant Prairie Municipal Court.
Okay. Yes.
So first violation would be $2,000, second $3,000, and third and subsequent would be $5,000. Plus costs.
Okay. And realistically, how many do you think will license?
Probably not many. Actually, there's a Grand Chute Police Department, or the municipality of Grand Chute, similar in size to the village of Pleasant Prairie, almost identical population. They enacted an ordinance very similar to this, probably almost exact, because they realized that they had a lot of activity that was popping up on the Internet. And they're close to a main highway, similar to us, I-94. They're on Highway 41, a lot of motels around the interstate. The year that they enacted this, they ended up making about 200 arrests for the crime of prostitution and soliciting the crimes. You know, it's just a small community, but they recognize that they had a problem, and they have similar penalties. I think theirs is $2,600 or $2,500 for the first violation. And they attacked it aggressively, as would we. And there was a need, and they did have an impact. So it's out there, and I think by enacting this ordinance, I think we'll do a great service to the village and protecting them. And I think, I don't know if we'll have many people register for it, but I think you'll see results from the ordinance.
I guess the good thing about this also is that if there's going to be a covert operation conducted by your department, my only fear is that we give the officer that's involved enough protection in case something does go wrong. And I hope that doesn't happen. But in stuff like this, very good possibility.
Yeah,
so I think we have now the tools, I think, to make an impact. I think a few incidents of a special assignment will do a lot of good as far as possibly curbing some of this activity.
I agree.
And I'm totally in favor of this. And if you're looking for approval, are we ready for this now at this first reading?
Yep.
I would move approval of ordinance, where am I at here, 13-02.
Second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde for adoption of ordinance 1302. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item F, consider ordinance 1303, ordinance to amend chapter 1 through 4, municipal code relating to violations and penalties.
Mr. President, members of the board, this will act in conjunction with the ordinance you just passed. What this does is it raises the fine for violations of prostitution and solicitation of prostitution, for those violations issued through municipal court. Right now, the maximum penalty for either of those is $500 plus costs. This ordinance would increase that amount to the same penalties as for the previous ordinance, which is $2,000 for the first violation and $3,000 for second, and $5,000 for each, the third and each additional. So it would work in conjunction with the previous ordinances passed.
One question. Kevin, maybe you can answer this. What happens if the arrested party doesn't pay?
If the arrested party doesn't pay, it would be similar to not paying any other ordinance violation. You would get a...
But that may not include jail time, is that right?
I don't know the answer to that question. I believe it would not, as an ordinance violation, as a matter of course, provide for jail time.
Fines would typically be sent to collections or tax intercept, but no jail time.
The laws has changed in the last few years as far as what we can impose for non-payment, and I don't think incarceration is one of them that we have at all alternative on. So. That's just a concern that I have with this. We'll see where it goes.
Right. That's not something we control. But in general, the implementation of these type of ordinances has had an effect of taking this activity out of municipalities and minimizing the secondary effects.
Okay. I move for approval of 1303.
Second.
Motion by Mike, second by Monica for adoption of ordinance 1303. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item G, consider ordinance 1304, ordinance to amend chapter 214, municipal code relating to licenses and permits.
Mr. President, board members, this ordinance actually incorporates amendments and some cleanup that was discovered as we were trying to add these additions in. So 214-1, license fees enumerated. Number F was added just because of the adoption of Chapter 170 with escort service and escorts. We'll skip to the same section, item P. If you recall, back in October of 2011, we had the secondhand article dealer and jewelry license update as a chapter, and although that's in the municipal code, those fees were not included in the licensing and permit, which just basically as cleanup, and now they are. And then we go to general licensing requirements, 214-2, and that enumerates the licenses that the village clerk can issue without board approval. Those ones that aren't bolded have been in there, but we did add trend 4 would be the escort and escort service licenses, and note that would be upon approval of the Community Development Department and the Chief of Police. We have a process when a license application would come in, how it proceeds through the staff. And then we added number 7, and this has happened because we've had these licenses already. I can issue a license with the approval of both the Community Development Department and the Chief of Police. So those, a little bit of cleanup, some addition. Going back to when I'm looking at G and H, the cleanup on that was we noticed licenses, all the licenses listed here expire June 30th, which they don't. This is an old ordinance that needed to be updated. So I've added, obviously, the December 31st. And I've noted, going back to sub M, sub O, that I've added the word calendar. and that takes care of all licenses, whether they're issued through June 30th or through December 31st or for a shorter term, such as a peddler's license, which is a three-month license. And then with N, it corresponds to that. Originally, it was May 15th. You would have to submit a renewal again when you have a calendar year license. That's not the case, so that was just changed to say at least 30 days prior to the expiration date of the license term. So some cleanup, some additions, and I would recommend this ordinance as approved.
I'll make a motion to approve Ordinance 13-04.
Second. Motion by Monica, second by Clyde for adoption of Ordinance 1304. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item H, consider operator license applications on file.
We have three of them tonight, Nicole Cloette, Ashley Centieri, and Joseph Strino. All applications had no records, and I would recommend approval.
Move approval.
Second. Motion by Mike, second by Clyde. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item 9, Village Board comments. Hearing none, we'll move on to item 10. Item 10 is to consider entering into executive session pursuant to Section 19.95, Paren 1, Paren G of Wisconsin statutes, and this is to confer with legal counsel for the governmental body who is running oral or written advice concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved. The board will... We need a roll call vote, right?
Move to go into executive session.
Yeah. Second.
Okay. Motion by Mike, second by Monica.
A roll call vote would be John Steinbrink.
Aye.
Clyde Allen.
Aye.
Mike Serpy.
Aye.
Monica Juhas.
Aye.
So carries. The board will return to open session for the purpose of adjournment only. No other business will be conducted.